Well, as you may have noticed, the sermon that was originally announced, I canceled and changed. What's unusual about that is not that I canceled and changed a sermon, but that it happened early enough to get an email blast out on what is an important topic that comes up for reasons that are depressingly obvious. There is a war being waged over women's bodies. And it is not the same old story, a fight for love and glory. There is no love in this battle, and there is no glory in this battle. It's an attack on women, women's rights, progress, choice, reproductive freedom, health, and women's lives. And I just never dreamed that we'd be here. This is a kind of Marxian struggle, a struggle over ownership of the means of production, in this case, the means of reproduction, over the control of women's wombs and women's lives, being waged largely by men, but with certain women surrogates who are also part of this battle. And I can't believe that we can be fighting these battles again today. That Ed's reading is so depressingly current that it could just be ripped from the headlines. When I was a volunteer with Planned Parenthood doing counseling at the Hayward office in the late 1960s, women had to establish that their lives were in danger or their mental health was in danger in order to get a therapeutic abortion, whether or not it had been from rape or incest, whether they were 11 or 12 or 13 years old. Roe v. Wade, we thought, changed that. But to every revolution, there is always and inevitably a counter-revolution. And there's a battle going on today that is a counter-revolution against women's rights and choice, but also against science and modernity. Nowhere in that time did I dream that there would be such an attack, sustained attack, really on the Enlightenment and on science, as well as on freedom. I never dreamed that we would be relitigating Roe v. Wade again and again and again, and that laws and impediments and stumbling blocks would be placed legally in the way of women and women's choices. Never dreamed that we'd be relitigating Darwin and evolution, that issues of scientific progress like stem cell research all of a sudden would become sacred religious issues that are politicized largely by a combination of very conservative politics and very conservative religion. And I have to, I guess, salve myself, take some kind of acceptance from the idea that freedom is never won permanently. Battles and wars really only have an armistice. And that every freedom and every right has to be fought for again and again. And we're in the midst of this important battle. And it's a battle that we dare not, men and women, lose, because it's about all of our lives. It's about how we see the world. It is about human freedom. It is about science. It's about health. These are life and death issues. When I worked at Planned Parenthood, we saved lives. Whatever your feelings are, and I understand that there are people with principled opposition to abortion, we saved lives. We saved lives with early screening of uterine cancer, of breast cancer, of problem pregnancies. We were able to intervene when we saw girls who had been sexually molested by family and by family friends. And we were the first filter on all of this at Planned Parenthood. And what is going on now is just shocking and, in my view, shameful. This war against women is not simply in the United States, and it's not simply the American right wing or Christian conservatives. It's going on all over the world. Men are fighting modernity and fighting women's rights to be individuals and autonomous individuals with equal rights to men. It's going on in the most extreme part of the Neturi Karta and Haradai in Jerusalem, where you have ultra-Orthodox, who are so Orthodox that they've lost track of the fundamentals of their religion, who are trying to resegregate society, to get women off of mixed-sex buses and get women into being fully covered, not quite as covered as a burqa, but not much less covered than in a burqa. And it's all for women's own good, really, because it's to protect women from the lustful urges of the men. Maybe we could give them something and cover them in burqas instead. When I look at the ultra-Orthodox and their willingness to spit on women and spit on girls who don't make it to their standards of modesty, I can't meaningfully distinguish them from the Taliban or the Salafists, who again are trying to take women out of cars, off of the streets, out of offices, away from universities, and to stuff them under veils and into burqas. It's part of the, and the same, incidentally, the ultra-Orthodox of Judaism and the ultra-Orthodox in Islam are on the same page. It's all to protect women from the uncontrollable, lustful feelings of men. Well, I'm glad we can agree on something. We're not to this point here yet. But it's the direction that a lot of people are going for. There are entry issues into the whole field of a woman's right to choose, a woman's right to equality. And it came up this week, obviously, because of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure's choice of being anti-choice. Their choice of defunding their money that they were giving, granting to Planned Parenthood across the nation, about $600,000 for all of Planned Parenthood. It's not a huge, huge contribution, but significant. And that was going completely to breast cancer screening. And they said, oh, well, we have to rescind that because we have a new regulation that any group that's being investigated, we can't give them money. Well, if you know this Congress, anybody can investigate anything, and this new regulation from Susan G. Komen was promulgated specifically for this cause, and that was to have a rationale to stop funding Planned Parenthood, because some of what Planned Parenthood does is not in keeping with Susan G. Komen's charter. It was a phony excuse. It was rolling over to conservative Christian as well as political influence, and they just really messed it up. This is one of the great lessons in PR and how not to do it. When I saw the story, I knew immediately that I was going to write about it. I wrote about it. I got it on the web on Wednesday. And I got tens of thousands of hits. And if you put in your Google field Komen and Craven, I'll come up at about number 6. If you put in Komen and betrayal, I come up at about 7 or 8, because lots of people had exactly the same associations. This was a phony rationale, and it unleashed in the social media just a firestorm, and appropriately so. It's an important issue, and if you're going to attack it on a basis of philosophy, do it straight. You know, if they had just said, we can't do this, it's against our principles, you can have the fight in the conversation. But to come up with this kind of nonsense of, oh, our friend in Florida started an investigation and therefore we can't do anything, was just silly. And every time the founder of Susan G. Komen for the Cure, Brinker, went on television, she made it worse and worse by saying, oh, this isn't about politics. Oh, this isn't about abortion. We've gotten so much support. The support for our position is just overwhelming, until 24 hours later, that overwhelming support became an apology. And all of a sudden, it felt really good. It felt really good, and that there was an important lesson here. And the important lesson is, don't accept prevarication. Don't accept people doing bad things and thinking they can get away with it with a slick cover-up that isn't slick and doesn't cover up. And the voice of the people got heard, and it made a difference. The voices of some 26 senators who petitioned Komen for the Cure got heard and got results. Most impressively, more to me than even, well, not more to me, but as important as it was that the voices of the people out there in social media got heard, there were some very brave women who resigned their positions with Komen for the Cure. The head executive director here in Los Angeles, two major officials back east, they put it all on the line for their own values and stood up against what was this really phony and, in my view, craven attempt to defund Planned Parenthood and basically just roll over to the people that said Planned Parenthood can't have a penny because part of their services are abortion related. Well, that victory felt really good. And I sat down and wrote a second article celebrating the power of the people to get organized, to get loud, to show passion, to withdraw funding, to put funding into Planned Parenthood, to vote with passion, with values, with wallets, with real commitment. And all of that was exciting, commendable, and there's a lesson for everyone here. But do not mistake this for being a final victory, because when you read the fine print in their backing away and saying, yes, we will continue to fund this $600,000 or so dollars that we had committed to Planned Parenthood, there was no guarantee that there would ever be further funding. They said, we will preserve their ability to apply in the future. Those, friends, are weasel words. This is not a struggle that is over or that is close to being over, and it's a struggle about more than a single issue. It's a struggle about our voices being heard, about women being respected. It's a struggle about priorities, because if one of the number one fundraisers in terms of breast cancer were willing to throw women under the bus, the issue of politics and priorities is an important one. And it goes to greater issues of reproductive freedom, because it isn't simply, though I think it's important, obviously important, it isn't simply about abortion. It's also about what some religious extremists are calling, and this is very hard to say, I mean literally, not emotionally, abortificants. abortive agents, so that an IUD is considered an abortion provider. A morning after pill, which prevents implantation, is an abortion provider. Women's rights to choose and to control their own sexual health is under attack, not just in America, but all around the world. These are critical and crucial issues. And it is just so ironic to me that political and religious persuasions that keep saying, we want government out of our bedrooms, is inviting the government into the bedrooms and into the wombs of women. And the irony there should be lost on no one and is completely lost on them. And there's that further irony that there are groups of people in the United States and across the world who believe that life is sacred and holy, and every ovulation, every ejaculation, every implantation, every gestation is a holy act of God incarnate until the baby's born. And then, oh well, there's a social safety net, and that should just take care of everybody, whether it's rape, incest, choice, no choice, whether there's birth control available or not available. This is a war that we cannot, must not lose. It's a war that we must fight for modernity, for science, for reason, for choice, for the autonomy of women, and for the dignity of women. That's big and that's global. And what happened this week was a shot in a battle that we won, but a war that isn't close to being over, and into which I hope all will enlist with passion, because it's about human life. When others are allowed to frame it as being pro-life, no. Pro-life is giving people freedom and choice over the use of their bodies. It's giving people medical care. It's giving people pre-birth medical services and post-birth medical services. If you want to be pro-life, take care of the emotional, physical health of women, of babies, of people.